Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Endocrinology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team on the role of GLP-1 receptor agonists in the modern management of stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk AS. In this podcast, a primary care physician, an endocrinologist, and a neurologist explore how GLP-1 receptor agonists can help to reduce the incidence of stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes.
Hello and a very warm welcome to everyone. My name's Dr. Yasser Javed. I'm a primary care clinician practicing in the UK, and I'm also the cardiovascular and diabetes lead for my local area in Northamptonshire. And we're in for a real treat today because it's a huge honour and pleasure to be joined by Professor Tina Vilsbol, who is a clinical professor at Steno Diabetes Centre Copenhagen in Denmark. Welcome, Professor Vilsbol.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time out of your diary. And we're also honoured to be joined by Professor Georgios Sevgoulis, Professor and Chairman of the Second Department of Neurology in Athens, Greece. Welcome, Georgios.
Thank you, Yasir. I'm glad to be here.
So as we know, we're really in a new era of type 2 diabetes management, where there's a much greater focus on trying to prevent cardiovascular events, the single leading cause of morbidity and mortality in patients with type 2 diabetes. I think we're aware that there are two classes of drug therapy that can impact in this trajectory. Perhaps SGLT2 inhibitors have hogged perhaps too much of the limelight. This session is going to focus on GLP-1 receptor agonists. And as many of you are maybe aware, certain of the GLP-1 receptor agonists have been associated with significant cardiovascular benefit in patients with type 2 diabetes, and in particular stroke outcomes. So that's going to be our focus today. Perhaps we can go to Tina firstly. Can you just give a very quick, succinct summary on how the GLP-1 receptor agonists work? You know, what mechanisms do they influence in the body systems?
Oh, yeah. I wish I had a very long time because there are so many interesting things to say about GLP-1. This peptide is an incretin hormone. It's released from the gastrointestinal tract as we eat, but it has a very short half-life, and that's why we need GLP-1 analogs. Right now, we have many different ones, but the most common one that we use are once-weekly GLP-1 receptor agonists, which are injections that you can give once a week. There are also an oral GLP-1, which you can take in the fasting state every day. The magic thing about GLP-1 is that, yes, it's a peptide, but it does not induce hypoglycemia. It improves glycemic control, but it's also correlated to a body weight decrease. And at the same time, its effect on blood pressure, on lipids, and the anti-inflammatory parameters in the blood, it's really, really interesting. When we talk specifically about stroke and cardiovascular disease, there are many rodent studies that indicate or demonstrate that GLP-1 changes the progression of atherosclerosis. There are many trials going on right now to look into what's the situation in humans. What we know so far is that it seems like that it changes atherosclerosis because of many things, but it changes endothelial function, it changes plaque stability. And in general, when we have all these large cardiovascular outcome trials, piling them together looks demonstrate a beneficial effect in respect to atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. And indeed, very much with respect to stroke. So it's so much more than just a glucose-lowering drug.
Absolutely. And we know that the cardiovascular benefits are independent of the sort of glucose-lowering and weight loss. And you've given some, you know, potential mechanisms, in particular, I think, the anti-inflammatory action that could influence the atherosclerotic trajectory, which, of course, differentiates them from SGLT2 inhibitors, whose cardio vascular protective effect is very much focused on reducing heart failure and improving heart failure outcomes. This is more on atherosclerosis. Georgios, you're very much in the business of dealing with patients who've had sort of catastrophic atherosclerotic cardiovascular events. Any further light to throw on how these drugs may influence that trajectory and may protect patients, in particular from secondary sort of prevention of stroke?
Yes, thank you, Yasir. First of all, I would like to highlight that approximately 20% of stroke survivors have history of diabetes mellitus or newly diagnosed diabetes mellitus, and 40% have diabetes mellitus or impaired glucose tolerance. Diabetes mellitus is a very strong risk factor for recurrent stroke in terms of small vessel disease, large artery atherosclerosis, even cardiembolism, because it's a potent risk factor for atrial fibrillation also. So it is very important in stroke survivors with diabetes to have optimal secondary prevention strategies. As Tina noted, there are multiple pleiotropic effects of GLP-1 receptor agonists. And I believe, based on a recent meta-analysis that we have conducted, that this effect is independent, as you already mentioned, of the blood glucose lowering effect. And it is consistent not only across primary, but also across secondary prevention, which is something new in our field. And this has not been shown by other similar medications.
And I think you've alluded to a very important point. We know that diabetes is not only associated with earlier cardiovascular disease, certainly with my cardiovascular perspective, cardiology perspective, that disease, that atherosclerotic disease, is often much more diffuse. So in a non-diabetic patient, we often see sort of single vessel disease in the coronary arteries, discrete lesions. But of course, in a patient who's had diabetes for a long time, it's much more diffuse, affecting multi-vessels, multi-territory. Is it the same in the brain, Georgios, when you see patients with diabetes?
It is very unfortunate, because you see extracranial atherosclerosis, you see intracranial atherosclerosis, you also see diffuse small vessel disease, infarcts in different territories. For me, it is the strongest risk factor to have multiple recurrent strokes. And of course, this leads to cognitive impairment, which is another issue that we don't have time to discuss. I'm going to go into that, but I'm a vascular neurologist. If we want our survivors to have a good quality of life, that means that they need to be cognitively intact.
So Tina, I'd like to bring you in now. Can you give us a summary of some of the seminal clinical trial data sort of indicating that positive benefit of GLP-1 receptor agonists on the incidence of cardiovascular disease, but in particular stroke?
Yeah, there are many cardiovascular outcome trials right now. Actually, we have in total 8 cardiovascular outcome trials with GLP-1 receptor agonists. In short, I'll tell you most about those that are the once weekly GLP-1s, because that's dulaglutide. We saw really nice data from the REWIND trial with dulaglutide, a once weekly GLP-1 receptor agonist, which was giving a little bit earlier in the diabetes disease. And actually in patients who were not that dysregulated or in very poor control, which is more common in some of the other CVOTs. So the data from the REWIND trial was really interesting, but also we now have data from the SUSTAIN 6 trial, which is with once weekly semaglutide, really, really beautiful data in respect to stroke. And when the Pioneer 6 and the SUSTAIN 6 was piled together, so that's oral versus subcutaneous semaglutide, also very, very strong data at 32% reduction in the risk of stroke with a hazard ratio that was significant. Very, very interesting data in a post hoc analysis of 2 large CVOTs. So I must say, in short, we have a lot of evidence today demonstrating that in patients with cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, they should indeed be treated with a GLP-1 receptor agonist, and then many of them probably also in a combination with an SGLT2 inhibitor.
Well, thanks, Tina. That was a great overview on the very impressive data from that cardiovascular, in particular stroke perspective. Georgios, how have these data translated into guideline evolution, particularly with your sort of stroke hat on? How have the stroke fraternity digested these data and impacted your clinical guidelines?
There were three large meta-analyses because, you know, all recent guidelines are based on meta-analyses or randomized controlled trials. And all these meta-analyses consistently showed a reduction approximately of 15 to 20% in all strokes, non-fatal strokes, cardiovascular mortality, all-cause mortality, and MACE. So this is a very strong evidence in favor of the indication of GLP-1 receptor agonists for secondary stroke prevention. This has been highlighted in the American Heart Association guidelines and the European Society of Cardiology guidelines. I don't want to burden right now this session with the guidelines, where there's going to be a next session focusing
on Georgios, can you clarify that the signposting of GLP-1 receptor agonists for this purpose is irrespective of HbA1c? You're really using these drugs not for their glucose-lowering properties, but for their cardiovascular protection. Is that what the guidelines are now saying?
Yes, this is exactly right. This is consistently shown across different trials, and it's also being reproduced by the meta-analysis.
Okay, brilliant. So look, why is there such a variation in usage of GLP-1 receptor agonists? And in my opinion, and I think the opinion of many, huge underusage across the board, really, particularly amongst sort of cardiovascular specialists. What is it? What are the real world factors that may affect whether clinicians use a GLP-1 receptor agonist? And what can we do to overcome these barriers, Tina?
Well, I think I fully agree with you that it's underutilized. And I think it's due to many things. Doctors don't understand how dangerous a disease type 2 diabetes is. But I also think that cardiologists, neurologists, nephrologists, they're a little bit afraid about it because it's an injection. They don't really understand the difference between GLP-1 and insulin. They might be worried about hypoglycemia, which is not an issue as long as you don't combine it with SU or insulin. And then I think that many cardiologists, the cardiologists have taken the SGLT2 inhibitors into their hands because it has to be simple for a cardiologist, doesn't it? It's just another tablet. But with GLP-1, I think many are worried about the side effects that they've heard about, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, you know, not only scary for the patients, but also for the doctors. But there I have to remind everyone that it's dose dependent, meaning that very few side effects with the low dose, and 85% of the patients have no side effects at all. So don't worry too much about the side effects. I think it's very important for all of you out there to get on board, try it, and see how happy your patients actually are when they are treated.
And to be honest, once you've told a patient about the associated weight loss, many of them sort of break their fear of injections. Yeah. But I do agree with you. I think fear of causing hypo, we need to break that myth. Unless you're using this with a sulfonylurea or insulin, you're not going to get that. Georgios, from what about your colleagues in neurology and stroke? Why is there such a reluctance to use a drug which clearly has such impactful efficacy data for stroke prevention?
The fear of hypoglycemia is the main factor. And of course, neurologists are not very familiar with antidiabetic medications. So they might refer the patient to a diabetes specialist or an endocrinologist or to a metabolism specialist, but then the patient may not go, and this is lost in translation. And I think that we should also discuss the multidisciplinary approach in the secondary prevention of these patients, that when you have a team of different experts at the same time taking care of this individual patient, that I think in this scenario, the real-world evidence will be much stronger in favor of GLP-1 receptor agonists.
Look, guys, we've completely run out of time. We've gone over time, but thank you very much for your expertise. I thoroughly enjoyed the discussions, and we very much hope it's of use to our viewers. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Endocrinology at www.touchendocrinology.com. Don't forget, there are three other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.